Thanks for tuning in this morning. I'm Drew, and since 1991, the Valley Oak SPCA No-Kill Rescue has been rocking and rolling here in Visalia in the area, really changing the lives of pets all over. And we have the executive director, Lydia House, with us today. And Lydia, thank you so much for talking with us, because it's a really important time for pets.
It is. And thank you so much for reaching out. We're really always happy to talk with you guys and let the community know what's going on with Valley Oak SPCA and the animals in our care. It is a very bizarre time, and there have been so many changes I would love to share with you that are happening not only in the community, but as far as the services that we offer to our community.
Some may think, oh, well, there's, you know, stay at home, you can't be out and about. So, you know, Valley Oak SPCA, they're not taking in the animals anymore or, you know, having adoptions. But that's definitely not true.
Yeah, it's not true, actually. And it is a common question, especially, you know, towards the beginning of the pandemic. You know, our number one question was, can we still come and adopt? You know, can we still come and get our pets vaccinations? And so, you know, the timeline for us was really to pause on some of our services. So, you know, we are a no-kill rescue, and we are also a veterinary clinic. And so we had to look at all of our services and see what we can adjust to safely continue to service our clients and customers. And so what we decided to do was take about a week where we assessed what services we wanted to offer, the most essential services, check in with, of course, the, you know, the AVMA, you know, veterinary medical boards and things like that, to make sure we were, you know, legally able to continue to offer services. There was a few weeks overall during the last few months that we had to close down the clinic, but it was really just trying to, you know, get our ducks in a row and see how we can continue to operate. On our veterinary clinic side, we almost immediately realized that we can offer services in a drive-through fashion, where our staff, our vet techs, come out to the parking lot to the customers. And so we changed that format just a little bit. First, it was parking, and now what we've landed on, and what is just absolutely an incredible way to offer the services, are the customers come up, they drive in a drive-through fashion to the front doors of our clinic. The techs walk out to their vehicle, either vaccinate the animal in their vehicle or bring the animal inside to vaccinate if it's safer, depending on, you know, how scared the pet is. And that way, the customers do not have to enter our facility at all. And so it's worked out really well. And of course, we had to couple that with removing our no appointment needed vaccination clinic. That was a big change for us. We've had that model since we started our clinic. And so what we implemented was appointments, you know, on our website. We had to upgrade a few things, some software and, you know, website options. And we started, you know, really just having people make an appointment for a vaccination before they come in. So it works out well. So we do appointments pretty much every 5 minutes throughout the day. We have extended our vaccination hours, and you can make an appointment to get your animal spayed and neutered, get the vaccinations. If you need something that is a little more detailed, you know, a dental or a deep ear cleaning or nail trim, you know, we do those appointments on Friday. But again, all appointments are done online for our clinic service.
That's a lot of appointments if you are really doing them every 5 minutes.
Exactly. We do over 60 appointments during the time frame of our vaccination clinic, and that is the number that we hit every single day. And we are usually booked out no more than a couple of days for vaccinations, because we are able to get so many people in. Our surgeries, it is the Central Valley, and everyone has a need to spay and neuter. Our spay and neuter surgeries are usually booked out for about a month. However, we are working on changing that up. We're looking at getting some other vets on our team and being able to offer more surgeries. We do right now, we do at least 25 spay and neuters every single day, and there's still a need for more to be done in the community.
How often do vaccinations need to happen for your dogs and cats?
So it depends on the age. So let's talk about a puppy. If you're if you just adopted a puppy from us, maybe it's had its first vaccination. So you typically want to start that around 2 months of age. But it really does depend. If this puppy is in a shelter environment and maybe it's at a high risk for diseases, you can start a little bit earlier. But obviously, that has to be under a vet's discretion. So typically, a two-month-old puppy can be away from its mom, able to be adopted, and you would want to start the vaccinations, distemper, parvo, at the minimum at that time. And so then it really depends on your veterinarian's series that they recommend. So for us, we recommend for an animal that's not in a high-risk situation, so a typical family who's adopting a puppy, you can actually go 4 weeks until the next series. But we want that puppy to continue to have a vaccination until they reach 16 weeks of age. So at 4 months, they should be, you know, fully vaccinated. And then you have the other things like the rabies vaccination, Bordetella that prevents kennel cough and different strains of kennel cough. And then, you know, there's a whole bunch of other things that go into the combo vaccination. So you're typically looking, once your puppy is done with the series, you're typically going to have an annual vaccination due for the booster of the distemper parvo. Rabies is done, the first shot will take 1 year for the booster, and after that you're looking at every 3 years. So it's pretty manageable, and it's a very, very important vaccination to get.
When you get a dog and you have it vaccinated once, that's not where it stops. It's something that needs to continue on.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up. You know, that we get that question a lot. And, you know, the work that we do with our rescue actually does involve a lot of emergency medical care. We've just became that rescue that people will reach out and say, you know, listen, we have our puppy got parvo, or someone found an animal that was injured, and we have, you know, a great doctor and great connections to help in that way. And I'm grateful that we can do that. But what we always find is, there's a puppy that might have received one vaccination. However, that one vaccination does not protect them from parvo whatsoever. It might just start the process a little bit, but boosters, just like with humans, with, you know, children, they're so important. They are not completely covered until their series is complete and up until that age that they need to be. You know, that can be sometimes four vaccinations, sometimes five, depending on how old the puppy was when it got its first vaccination. But it is very true. Those dogs can get parvo if they're not completed with their series, and it's a very easy disease to catch.
Now, what if someone says, well, I have a cat, but it never leaves my house, so why should I continue to, you know, get it vaccinated if it's just in my house?
Well, the easy answer on that one is it is the law. So when it comes to rabies vaccination, it is very, very controlled and regulated, and for very good reasons. If we had an outbreak of rabies, a lot of animals and pets and wildlife would be in danger. And then, of course, there's the danger that this is a zoonotic disease. It can go to people as well. Obviously, that part is not common, but to give you a real quick fun fact, Tulare County actually does see a good handful of bats that do test positive for rabies. And so, you know, we don't operate animal control anymore, but we did for 25 years. And that was one of our main jobs, was rabies control. Make sure that if any animal did bite another animal, did that pet have a current rabies vaccination? Does it need to do the state mandated bite hold just to observe to see if it does have any signs of rabies? And it's been, I want to say, 40 to 50 years since there's been a positive dog in this area. There was a positive cat up in, I think it was Fresno County, I believe, about a year ago. So it can happen. So, you know, back to your question, the easy answer is you have to get your pet vaccinated for rabies, whether it's going to be inside your home, no matter what, because it is the law. And it's also the law to license your pet. And you can't get a license without a current rabies vaccination. So just to be compliant on all those areas, it's very, very important to get the vaccination done.
With the way that technology is involved now with everything, even in your pets, if you get your pet chipped, does that have the information of, yes, this dog has been vaccinated and all of that information?
Indirectly, yes. Basically, you were going to have a number that's going to pop up on the scanner. And wherever you took that animal to be scanned, or if it's your own pet, there's a manufacturer, or there's multiple manufacturers for microchips. But you're really needing to contact the implant facility for that microchip. So, for example, if you find, just yesterday, there was a family who brought in a feral cat to have it spayed or neutered with us. We scan all of our animals, even feral cats. We scan everyone for microchips. And on this specific cat, we found a microchip. So we were able to track back the owner's information and find out a little bit about that cat and get them reunited. Actually, the cat had been missing for about 4 years, so it was a happy ending. So that microchip didn't tell us what vaccinations it had, but it did. The company was able to tell us the phone number, address, name, last time it was updated. There's usually information if it is, you know, spayed or neutered and that kind of thing. But the owner or the facility who implanted it, whether it was a vet or a rescue or animal control facility, they're going to have the medical records attached to that. So indirectly, you will be able to find out the medical history for that animal with through a microchip.
Do you see if you come across a cat or a dog that happens to be chipped, do you see that very often as a stray?
More so now. Yes, we do. I would say back in, you know, the early 2000s, leading into like even 2012, it was more rare for an animal to enter an animal control facility that had a chip. That was really when the push started for microchips. And so, especially in this area, it would be, I mean, I'm just throwing out a guess here, but it'd probably be one in every 40 to 50 animals that had a microchip that came in. And what happened is shelters started microchipping animals, required microchips on the day they were reclaimed. And so there has been so much forward progress with, these permanent forms of identity. And honestly, the best news I've heard in a while was the state of California did pass a law that says now any animal leaving a shelter environment, animal control or wherever, it does have to be microchipped. So that's great. And it's really common practice now. I mean, we sell microchips at our clinic. Every animal we adopt out is microchipped. We push that very, very strongly in the community because it really does help animals be reunited to their families.
When a dog is found, say, and brought to you, you guys automatically scan it, like you said. What are the chances of the fact that you scan it and the dog was dropped off and reuniting with the owners then? Or will you guys just erase the prior owner's information and put the new owner in?
So that is actually regulated as well. When you have an animal that is found by a Good Samaritan and brought in and there's a microchip, that animal, we know because it is chipped, it's considered an owned animal. And so there are steps that have to be done before that animal can be released to anybody. And so the best place for that animal to be is at either an animal control facility or a rescue group that is partnering with animal control. That's what we do right now, especially during this pandemic. If someone finds an animal or, you know, say a dog out in the county and they bring to us and they can't keep it, we contact the Tulare County Animal Services facility and we let them know, here's the description, here's a picture of the dog. It was microchipped. We're going to try to locate owners. And so then they can note that in their system. And if the owner shows up to their facility, they'll let us know. And so that's when kind of the detective work starts. So you scan that animal, you find a chip, you call the manufacturer for the microchip, get as much information as possible, including what facility implanted the microchip. And then this is the most difficult and frustrating part with the microchipped animal. If you're calling all of the numbers and you're getting a disconnected number every time, or, you know, wrong number, and maybe you have an email that's bouncing back, it's really frustrating because you know that this animal belongs to this family, but you cannot contact them. So we take the social media though. We will look up the name and information on Facebook, and, you know, Instagram, any site that we can find them. We'll Google them. And a lot of times that's really how we're successful of reuniting families. And you know, that's kind of, you just have to go the further step. We want to reunite animals with their families. Where it gets a little complicated is we've had some people find an animal and maybe the animal is in good shape, but it has been missing, say, for 5 years. I think the longest we had was 8 years. So that tells you that the dog went missing. The original owner, you know, was responsible, microchipped the dog or cat. And somebody else found this pet. However, they failed to have it scanned for a microchip and kept it as their own. So just because you find a lost animal doesn't mean necessarily it's been stray living on the streets in the sense. So your first responsibility when finding an animal is to try to find the owners, which means you go to a facility and have the microchip scanned, or have that animal scanned for microchip. So when we've done that reuniting, it's nice and it's great to see these families reuniting with their pets. However, there's another family now that's going to be sad because they're missing a pet that they've taken care of. But the microchip is a legal form of ownership that goes back. The animal legally can go back to the original owner.
What if the animal's retrieved, someone picks it up, takes it in, gets it scanned, and then you get in contact with the owner and the owner's like, yeah, I don't want that anymore. And then
it happened. Mm-hmm.
What do you do at that point?
So it sometimes it's understandable. So the case that it really, I think, to me was justifiable in a way, but still heartbreaking, was a older white boxer that had been out in the county for 3 or 4 months and people had been trying to catch it. And we were asked to help, I'd taken my team out to see what we could do. And as soon as we saw the condition of the dog, we knew that it was critical. So it's kind of like, instead of just sitting back and looking at this situation for a couple weeks, maybe setting some traps, we kind of just pulled out the big guns and formed a team and just basically try to capture the dog. And we did get him. It took a couple different ways to do it and two different people with some ropes and things, but we got him. So he was old, he had horrible arthritis, and he was extremely emaciated. So remember, this dog had been out in this orchard area he had been sighted for 3 or 4 months, like I said. So he had some injuries. We brought him back to our clinic to get medical help right away. And we were really surprised to see not only was he neutered, but when we scanned him, a chip came up. And so what ended up happening, his name was Sonic. A lot of our followers and supporters would probably remember him. He crawled into our hearts and we all fell in love with him. So basically we called the phone number on the microchip and the family had said he had been missing for 4 years. And as much as they wanted to take him back and they really did love him, they did a great job by neutering him and getting him chipped. He had escaped their facility and they lived in Hanford. So he was found right outside the city of Tulare. So we don't really know what he did for those 4 years, but he didn't live in the orchard for 4 years probably. So somebody probably had him. But because of the extensive medical costs that it was taking to actually get him healthy enough to where he would survive, the owners were just not able to pay for it. And they said, you know, if you guys can take him and then find him a new home and care for him, that they were okay with that. And so we did. And I think that ended up in a really good situation, and that's probably the best outcome we had.
Do you find that with this weird times right now and money is tight for a lot of families, that money is the ultimate evil of why these pets are going out and they're just letting them go?
Yes, absolutely yes. And I will say, you know, speaking of kind of the rescue side of our organization, we had some really tough times the first few months because we not only saw an increase of animals that were dumped. It is a common thing. You know, I've mentioned it before and nobody likes to hear it, but it is the absolute truth. This area has an epidemic of animal dumping. They have, dogs and puppies and cats too, dumped in orchards every single week, I guarantee it. And so one thing that we do is we are very boots on the ground and we want to go out and make sure that we can try at least to get these animals captured so they're not, you know, being attacked by coyotes, fending for themselves in that way and, you know, and starving. And a lot of these dogs don't know how to fend for themselves in the wild. Not all of them. Some of them could do it. But what we're seeing is it's families of dogs. So there was one situation outside of Exeter. There were seven dogs, or actually this was over south of Porterville. Seven dogs were dumped in an orchard. Seven. It took us about a week to get them all, but we got them using traps and different things. And then within 2 weeks of that, we had a mom and a litter of puppies and a chihuahua and another big dog dumped, you know, outside of Exeter. So it happens. And what you realize are these are family pets. These animals they knew some love. They weren't extremely afraid of people, but you get, you know, that survival mode, and dogs won't come to you. If they've been offending for themselves, they are in survival mode, and it doesn't matter even if they see them, their owner, sometimes they won't recognize them and they'll run. We really tried to help out in that area more in the last few months because the county shelter specifically and city of Visalia shelter as well, they were really limited. They had to drop, the county had to drop down to, I think, one or two officers. It is a huge county for them to try to have that jurisdiction only under one or two officers care. So we worked a lot with them. You know, have you seen them? We'll go out and take a look. And then when we captured them, okay, well, we have them. If you find an owner that comes forward, let us know. But that doesn't happen very often when they're blatantly dumped, obviously.
Is there a danger to the public if there are animals roaming around like that?
Yeah, it goes back to, you know, number one, if you have unvaccinated pets roaming in rural areas, there's always a risk for diseases like rabies. You know, again, I said, we don't see rabies positive dogs, really, but there is a possibility. Coyotes and foxes, they can also carry distemper. So again, unvaccinated dogs, distemper is a horrible disease that's very deadly. Not to mention parvo, same thing. It's a horrible disease, and there's, you know, a very high mortality rate associated with those diseases. So, you know, if you can't, it comes down to this: if you can't afford to care for your animals, or if you have unaltered, which means your pets are not spayed or neutered, animals together, you're going to have litters of puppies or litters of cats. And if you can't afford to do that, we want to be your resource. There are multiple resources in this area, thank goodness. But the very, very last thought that should enter your mind is, I'm just going to dump them in an orchard and let them fend for themselves, or somebody in the area will pick them up. Because that is an extremely difficult thing to do, is to catch a dog that has been dumped that is trying to survive on its own. They just don't operate in a, oh, it's a puppy, here, come here. They are running scared, and they absolutely are difficult to catch. So it's the happy ending that is in their mind is just not a reality. It takes a lot of experience and practice and equipment to catch those animals. But absolutely, it does go back to finances. And I do believe that's why we saw an increase in family pets being dumped, you know, in rural areas. We saw an increase in animals that were surrendered to us too, because of financial problems. We've seen that since April now. So it's happening.
If someone is in financial trouble, but they don't want to get rid of their pet, you know, a pet is part of your family. You obviously want to do everything that you can, but maybe the dog does have a couple of health issues that need to be addressed. Is there financial help that a family can get for help with their animals?
I'm so glad you asked that. That's actually one of the things I wanted to talk to you about. So the answer is yes, absolutely. And so Valley Oak SPCA has really committed ourselves to trying to find grants to help keep animals in their homes, and also help, you know, emergency medical cases when the owners cannot afford them. And so our goal, you know, going back to our animal control days, our goal is to keep animals off the streets, but to also keep animals with their families. And so we have an amazing grant writer that is a board advisor for us. And she does so much work in the grant writing department for us. And we have been lucky enough to receive a lot of grants in the last few years that enable us to offer free services to low-income individuals. And so what that looks like a little bit is a couple of our grants come from PetSmart Charities, which is the foundation that obviously is connected with the PetSmart stores. They are a great, absolutely wonderful organization, and it is a very competitive grant process. But we have been lucky enough to receive these grants for a few years now, and these total in hundreds of thousands of dollars, really, at this point, through the last few years. And every penny of that goes to, for instance, if a family has a dog, they want to get the dog neutered, they are low income and they can't afford it, all they have to do is apply through us, and we will be happy to neuter their dog for free of charge, 100%. If a good example, just the other day, someone's pet had got pregnant, was having trouble delivering puppies, went three, it's called dystocia. Basically, she was not able to deliver. Puppies were probably too big. The dog was going to die a horrible, horrible, painful death. The family had no money. We ran them through our grant. They asked for help. We had that dog on the table getting surgery within hours of coming to us. We were able to save her life and send them back to their family. And so we... It is. And I like to call it, it's kind of this judgment-free
zone. Oh, that's great.
We don't care the situation that you're in. Let us educate you. Let us give you the resources you need to get your pets healthy and get the medical care they need, and absolutely spay and neuter them. And so that's what we've been focused on. And we just did receive a grant to continue this work. It's through the DMV, interestingly enough. the license plates that you see that talk about spay and neuter and that kind of thing for California. Yeah, so they actually offer grants. And so it was the first time we applied for it, and we received $43,000.
Oh, yeah.
It's called the Pet Lovers Grant. And so it's going to be up on our website today. It'll kind of piggyback with the other grants that we have through PetSmart charities. And basically, it allows us to spay and neuter anyone who qualifies for low income, spay and neuter their animals for free, and also covers feral cats. So if you have a feral cat problem in your area and you just can't afford to cover the cost out of pocket, we'll do it for free because the grant pays us back. So it's just so exciting. It's one of the my favorite things that we do here.
And I think that would change the outlook of a lot of pets and the way that a family deals with them, knowing that that is available. Because I know that, you know, families already are stressing about how they're going to buy groceries or buy gas. If there are other things there to help out, that's great. Go to VOSPCA.org. You can follow Valley Oak SPCA on Instagram and Facebook. And we're talking with Lydia House, the executive director. And Lydia, I think that the things have been going so well, and then all of a sudden 2020 hit. But there are phases of the adoption center that you guys were trying to get going to the next phase. What's the plan for the future of the adoption center?
So it's a pretty incredible plan, and it is a very frustrating plan. And so I'll tell you, I was just about to announce that we had gone through all of the city permitting processes, and we were ready to pick up our building permit for the plans for our new facility. And so right now we are in a temporary location for both the adoption center and the clinic. We want to, you know, own our building, and obviously leasing the two facilities, we're not able to purchase them. So we have a couple of acres off of Goshen and Plaza area. So we were ready to pull the trigger on this. We're super excited. This was years in the works. And then a huge realization came over me and some of the people in the team, which was we built plans for a 20,000 square foot facility. And we, in that model, in that business model, we made these huge lobbies to hold 100 people because our model was no appointment needed for adoptions or for vaccinations. Come in and we can hold 50 people, you know, and do these vaccinations. Well, COVID changed the world, and that it absolutely changed our method of offering our services. And so we realized we have a building that is just not suitable for how we offer things now and how we offer our services, adoptions, and clinic. We are never changing it. We have found that it is honestly incredible. We will always stay with the appointments, both for adoptions and clinic services. So I had to, unfortunately, tell my poor contractors that we had to scrap the plans, and that was really hard to do. However, we really did a lot of work, and we came up with not only an amazing plan, but what the first in its kind, which nobody else knows this but you. So because you're our buddy, I'm hoping, you know, we can get the word out via this station. What we're building is the first drive-through vaccination clinic in the area, actually in the state, unless I can find somebody else who's doing it right now. I found one on the East Coast, but not in California. So if you can picture a bank drive-up, or maybe even picture Taco Bell, it's going to be, you know, obviously doors. You'll pay at a window, but there'll be doors where the tech comes out to your car and gets your animal. It's going to be a covered drive-through, and I just can't wait.
Gosh, that's great.
Yeah, I'm so excited about it. So we were able to recreate the plans and turn it into something that the timing just wasn't, it was perfect, really, because if we would have broken ground for this new facility and realized then that we needed to put in a drive-through, you know, every penny that we bring in towards our new facility fund and our organization is so important, and that would have just taken money that we didn't have. So yep. So that's the plan. Right now we have a 15,000 square foot facility that will be going through, again, the permitting processes, and it will have a one of a kind drive through vet care.
Absolutely amazing. Valley Oak SPCA doing major things here in the Valley to take care of the pets and to get a pet into your home. Adoptions by appointment. Go check them out again. VOSPCA.org. And donations, 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 always appreciated. Financially, you can help out that way. Or you guys have a list of items that people can donate to you that you need there at the shelter.
Absolutely, yep. And it's on our website. We have an Amazon Smile wish list, are the most needed items. It's listed right on the front page of our website.
Lydia, I always love talking to you. As a matter of fact, we could talk for 2 or 3 hours about
That's right, we can.
Everything going on there at Valley Oak SPCA. But thank you so much for sitting with us today. And we'll definitely want to follow up with you in the very near future about how things are going.
Yeah, sounds great. I'll hold you to it. Thanks so much, Drew. We miss you.